Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network podcast for all things two-wheeled. I'm your host, Lewis Duncan, and joining me as ever is Oriol Puigdemont, Motorsport.com's global MotoGP editor, and Yuri. We're at the end of another triple header, thankfully, so we can have a bit of time off after this. But, you know, a championship is exciting as ever.
Yeah. Hopefully, yes, we're going to have some quiet time, despite I don't think we're going to be totally relaxed because we are expecting some more updates regarding next year's grid. So, but yeah, the championship is getting more excited. I think we're gonna find and we're gonna have a much close fight between the I think 2-3 maximum title contenders. But yeah, I think it looks really, really good. And then, of course, we have to see which impact is going to have when Mark will come back.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. We've got 6 rounds left, and it very much feels now like we are in that endgame situation where the championship is beginning to... There's a little bit more of a form guide. Fabio's back in the lead of the championship, but Joan Mir has been so, so strong these past 5 races. Already it looks like it's becoming between those two guys. Fabio, of course, won the Catalan Grand Prix this Sunday, but he was a lap away from losing that race. Mir again, so strong coming through the field, but qualifying let him down. So it does look like it's between these two guys. It's looking like it's becoming between these two guys now.
Yeah, but don't forget that, I mean, all the ups and downs we've had in those 8 races. So I wouldn't say that Dovi, for example, is not there anymore. Despite he's struggling to find a right base for the bike, he's not been, I mean, consistent since Austria, and he's not been riding on top since then. But I don't brave enough to say that he's not gonna be there in 2-3 races time, especially if we consider how crazy this champion is. And don't forget that Ducati is working full gas like all the others. And if they find the key, I think Dovi in a way will be there. I mean, don't forget that this last race, he made a really impressive start, but then he had bad luck with his Arco crash.
Yeah, it's interesting. We'll begin with Dovi. We'll be a bit unconventional and begin with the guy who didn't finish a race, but you are right. If he gets into a bit of form, he does have the experience he knows how to fight for a championship. But the problem is, you know, he started 17th. He struggled again in Barcelona with the braking, with this rear tire, and he put himself in that position by having a bad qualifying to be where Zarco crashed. And so it's this stuff as well that's costing him big time. Like you say, great start. I think he came from 17th to 10th, and then he felt he could have had the pace to go with the Pramac boys, who were 5th, 6th, Miller and Bagnaia. So that would have been a pretty decent result, but it doesn't look like he's finding a way forward. He knows he knows what the problem is, but he can't fix it. And every race, it's different. The goalposts move.
Yeah, I think he's pretty honest with that. He, after every race, he says the same. I mean, yes, I'm there, but this is not the reality. The reality is that we don't have the speed to be there. I mean, it's just because of the circumstances, because of all the ups and downs that have affected everybody. But in a normal conditions, he knows that he wouldn't have been there for so long. So let's see what happened. But don't forget that in Austria, for example, when he was really strong, the Yamaha were struggling quite a lot. So as you said, the only bike which looks stable is the Suzuki at the moment, because Honda has different problems. But the bike with more consistent base is the Suzuki.
For sure. And it's interesting you say that because, like you said, Dovi was strong in Austria. But if you think about it, he was actually worried that if Alex Rins got ahead of him, chances are he wouldn't have been able to fight with the Suzuki. So even at a track that was good for Ducati, you could say the Suzuki has been so strong, and it's been strong everywhere. And Rins has struggled a lot with his injury, and I think a lot more than people realize. Because it was a nasty injury. He essentially broke the same bone that Mark did, but he also dislocated the shoulder, which sounds horrible. But Mir has been there every race since Bruno. Bruno, he had the incident, but he had the pace there, and he's like you said, he's been the most consistent. So looking ahead to that, Suzuki look just really, really. Like they're getting harder, like a win is coming.
I think especially on Mir's hand, because he apparently, despite this is his second year in MotoGP, and he's only 23, so he apparently knows how to play the game, and he exactly knows what to say and how to react in every single race and in every single action and every single press conference. And you can at least I noticed that he knows exactly what to say, how to say it, and how to write and how to race, which is very impressive for a rider at his age and with his experience. And even Suzuki's beliefs, and I've been in touch with them this weekend, and they are really, well, they are impressed, but at the same time, they knew that there was coming because he's very intelligent, he's a hard worker, and they knew that sooner or later, this rider was going to rise. But they really believe then he can be a title contender. But again, they're not going to say it publicly because it would show, they don't want to express it this way. But yeah, they have a lot of confidence on that he at least will fight for his chances.
Mm-hmm. I always find it interesting when Juan's asked about the championship, because he always seems to say, I can't really say I am a contender right now because I haven't won a race yet. I need to win that first race. And that's, again, that just shows the level of maturity. But he knows as well that he said last weekend that he needs to get the best results possible, and he needs to bank points, four podiums in the last five. And that Barcelona podium, I thought, was really indicative of where Juan is mentally as a rider, because he got stuck behind Miller for so long, and that he could have easily outbraked himself or done something silly, but he just bided his time, knew that the tire would come to him, and then he jumped right up to second. That is the mark of a rider that can win a championship.
Yeah, I mean we've seen Fabio making that mistake 2 weeks ago. I mean, just for being trying to be, trying to fight with this anxiousness and anxiety, and then he had a crash. So I think Mir has learned from the crash in Jerez, and then he says, "Listen, I'm not gonna repeat it anymore." So that's why he prefers to take his time to let the race go, and then when it's the right time for him, he attacks. And when he attacks, all the others are struggling with the tire consumption. So, which was the strategy previously set by Suzuki and the one that this bike allows to do.
Mm-hmm. You have to think as well, if Suzuki can just iron out that qualifying, if Juan can get onto the front two rows, then he's going to be a lot harder to beat. One rider that is quite hard to beat when he's on the front row, when he's in you know, first, second position is Quartararo. He did exactly what he needed to do on the bike around Barcelona, which was get to the front as early as he could and then run his own pace, run his own rhythm. And you have to think this is quite an important result for him, because it comes after Mark made some comments that he was disappointed and he expected more from Fabio. And of course, Fabio had a difficult sort of four or five races. So you have to think this was a very, very important Sunday for him.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, he was forced to do that. Especially this week, we're gonna run a story about the pressure. And I mean, yesterday he admitted that the lack of results was starting to play a role in his head, to play a game in his head. So that's why it was important for him to stop and to break this bad results. So and yesterday, I mean Sunday, Quartararo did what he had to do, which was being in front, and especially what he have to do, what any Yamaha rider has to do if he wants to win a race, which is being in front as fast as possible, and then goodbye, ciao. So they've been lucky that there was no Ducati in front, that there is no Honda in front, because otherwise it would be difficult for them to overtake. But this is the way, and that's what Maverick was not able to do.
Maverick, he got swamped at the start and then just he couldn't do anything. His pace was okay towards the end of the race. He said it was impossible to overtake the Aprilia and to overtake the Honda of Cal Crutchlow. But it's frustrating, because Maverick, he finally looked to make that breakthrough at Misano, and then they went the wrong way with setup across the weekend. They were struggling with edge grip and front locking, and as they tried to fix those things, they went further away from the bike at Misano and they got lost, is what Maverick said. But you cannot afford to do that now, and Yamaha can't afford to do that as well if they want a factory team rider to win the championship, which is, you know, what you employ a factory team rider to do.
Yeah, especially because in the end they are trying to put the most sophisticated and the most, I would say, technical words on the work they do. But it's much more easy than that. I mean, when he says that, yeah, we've been working in a different direction the past two weekends, it means that they've been working, that they have put it fuel tank until the top. I mean, with full tank, they've been in the FP1, 2, 3 with the fuel tank maximum. So, I mean, it's not that they have found any really secret. They are, you know, playing with different cards or no. I mean, common sense. If this guy is struggling with the first laps, so just work on that. And the main way is to work like this. So, again, I mean, it's the with Maverick, we have the same story. I mean, we have those ups and downs. Even when he speaks to us, it's very difficult to understand in which moment and what he is trying to say us. Because, last Sunday after the race, he pointed out again to the team. And the team that he has chosen, the team that he has changed. So, listen, I mean, it's the only, I wouldn't say the only, but yeah, it's the main Yamaha rider with this kind of problems. I mean, nobody says this, whoa, this bike doesn't work. This bike, I mean, we've seen Fabio winning races. We've seen Morbidelli winning races. We've seen, yesterday Rossi crashed when he was second. Mm-hmm. So we would have had two Yamahas in the podium. So what's the point?
And you look as well, the last 3 weeks have been dominated by Yamaha. You know, there's nothing...
I don't think the bike is things, that bad.
Yeah, there are things wrong with it. We know it's quite a lot down on power. We saw that with, Morbidelli, for example, was 22 kilometers an hour down on the Ducati in the race, which is... He is on the 2019 bike, but that the fastest 2020 Yamaha was only 5 kilometers an hour quicker than him. So that is a problem, and because of that, they can't overtake. But yeah, the bike itself isn't bad. It's you know, we saw that in the race on Sunday. It really isn't a bad bike, but it's strange that Maverick can't figure it out, and it's been 3 years now that he can't figure it out. And like you say, change the team, still can't figure it out. It's bizarre.
The gremlins are always on his garage.
Yeah, and you can give the rider the benefit of the doubt, and you know, we know Maverick's talented as anything. You know, this is a properly quick rider, but
yeah, but in the end, there's no. I mean, we've seen it with Mark, for example. There's no a perfect. I mean, yes, in a season, you maybe can have two races with the perfect conditions for you and for your bike. Yeah, but the 90% of the races, you will have to adapt to the difficult conditions. Sometimes it's the bike, sometimes it's the track, sometimes it's the weather, but you will have to adapt. And when we say that those riders who are consistent, solid, it means that they have a better adaptation to the circumstances. And he's apparently not the best on that.
Mm. Yeah, he does seem very sensitive to any kind of change, and it's a strange one. And I don't know how you would fix that. I mean, you know, do you tweak your training? Do you train more on flat tracks like we see with Rossi and all the VR46 guys, and Mark as well? That's Mark's key thing, is he's dirt bike training, but we know Maverick does some of that himself anyway. So how do you?
I mean, we've seen many riders coming from the back, especially this year. So we've seen Mir. Okay, he's not been stuck in the 14th place like Maverick was on Sunday in the first lap. But yeah, I mean, we've seen many riders coming from the back and being able to finish in a decent position. So it's not. Nothing really, really crazy. What we are, trying to figure out.
Yeah, hopefully things work out for Maverick, because it's just frustrating seeing him make these steps forward and then he steps back, and it's just, you know, it's frustrating. Let's talk about quickly. We'll talk about Rossi. We can't not talk about Rossi because it was quite a big weekend. Finally, we got the confirmation of his 2021 deal. I mean, we've said everything there is to say about that. I don't think we need to say any more because we've known it for 6 months now. But I think it was a big weekend in that Rossi truly sort of vindicated, you know, his decision and Yamaha's decision to stay for 2021, because he was quick all weekend. He was fast in qualifying. And like you say, he was heading for the podium before a crash, and he might even have won that race had his tires been better than Fabio's at the end. So a big weekend in terms of Rossi has all the doubts are gone. There's no
it was a big shame that race, because I think this kind of championship has the perfect elements for him to show his experience. I mean, it's a championship which you have to manage many different factors, and he is the most experienced rider of the grid, so he's supposed to have more experience than anybody else in those, let's say, tricky moments or conditions or races. So, yeah, it was a shame. He admitted that it was his fault, that he was a bit too fast. He was pushing a bit too much on that turn two, and I think that the podium was 100% for him, and probably maybe even was able to fight for the race, which would have been crazy.
Yeah, and it would have been massive for his championship, because he would have been third in the points had he finished second. So, you know, now he's 50 points back and the championship looks a bit hard for him now. Things could have been a lot different. Like you say, had he had that result, then maybe going into Le Mans, mindset would have been different.
Yeah, I don't see Rossi fighting for the title, to be honest. but listen, that's my opinion.
But of all the years it's going to happen, you think, you know, this one, given how crazy it is.
I don't think that he has any obligation on fight for the championship. Yeah. But he's really competitive, and that's enough. I mean, for him to stay. I mean, what else should we ask him?
Rossi's a little bit like Mark in a sense that, you know, Mark loves racing. This is why he goes racing, because he loves it. And it's the same with Valentino. And if you listen to what he said on Saturday, you know, he was talking about how his results last year, he didn't want to repeat those. So he made all these changes with the crew chief. And, you know, someone of 25 years experience, 40 years old, to make those changes just so he can be competitive again shows just how much he wants it and how much he loves racing. He doesn't, like you say, he doesn't care about the championship so much. He just loves being able to fight at the front in MotoGP, and that's enough.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's his life. I mean, the MotoGP championship is his life, so he's enjoying. And why, if he's still competitive and Yamaha has found him a place, a seat, so what's the point on, I don't understand who says no, but he has to retire. Why? I mean, if he has to retire, what the others have to do, the ones who are behind him? I mean, with the half of his age. So what's the point?
Yeah, I will admit, at the start of this year, a lot of me thought I would rather him retire, because I don't want to see him fight for eighth position like he was last year. But he's shown this year that that's not where he's fighting. He's fighting for the top five. He's fighting for the top three. So, yeah.
In the end, it's like a football player. I mean, yeah. There are moments where you are on the, how do you call that? On the pinnacle of your, on top of your condition. And it's the moment that you have to fight for the league, for Champions League, and for the most relevant and important trophies. But after that, there's still a long way to go, and you can be in a different team, not fighting for winning the Champions League, but, for example, fighting for the Europa League, I don't know. And I think that's what he's going to do next year. I don't see himself fighting for the championship in the Petronas team, but I think he can be competitive to fight for some podiums, maybe victory at some point. So what else should we ask him?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's can't argue with that. I just quickly, I think we'll end on the KTMs, because it's a strange one, because we all expected the KTM to be really strong this weekend because conditions were a bit like Bruno, but it wasn't the case. You know, the condition, they really struggle when it's too warm and they really struggle when it's too cold, so they need perfect conditions. And if we look at the rest of the championship, we're not really going to get that. Le Mans going to be frozen. Aragon's always quite cold. Valencia is cold, and Portugal will be roughly the same, I'd have thought. So it seems that championship charge that we thought might be possible seems to be slipping away a little bit from KTM.
Yeah, I think, and there's another factor. I mean, KTM has been in Misano, I don't know how many times. They've been in Austria. It's the Red Bull track. So, and they were not in Barcelona. So that's why. Another story. I mean, they've been testing most of the tracks. They've been in Jerez many times before the race. They've been, you know, they've been in Brno as well. They've been in Austria. They've been in Misano. So they haven't been in Barcelona. So it makes a big difference.
Yeah. It seems as well that this will be the point of the championship where the problems with the bike, this is where they'll find them, because, like you say, they've had all this test time, so they've been able to refine the bike for that circuit. But, you know, we're going to quite different circuits in Le Mans, Aragon, Valencia. So this will be an interesting fact-finding mission for next season.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Let's see how they go in Le Mans. If they go well in Le Mans, well, maybe we have to change our mind. But until now, I think that's why they love to test in those racetracks, because they know that they can get a lot of information and they're going to use it, of course. So, which is fair, but now we can see how important is the test for this team. And don't forget that next year they're not going to be allowed to do that. So let's see how they evolve.
Indeed. On that note, Yuri, we'll pack it up there and we can go and have a bit of a holiday. Thank you very much for your company, as always, and thank you to the listeners. If you like what you heard, you can go and listen to all of our previous shows on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts and wherever people get podcasts these days. Follow Autosport, motorsport.com for all the Catalonia reaction, all the stuff from the weekend, and keep tuned for this week because we are expecting announcements from Ducati. And we will be back next week probably to discuss what will be the next triple header, starting with the French Grand Prix. But until then, it is a very warm goodbye.